The Committee for Brisbane acknowledges the original custodians of the land upon which this podcast is being produced, the Turrbal and Yuggera people, and pays respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Welcome to our second podcast from the series associated with the work of the Committee for Brisbane Subcommittee on Connectivity. And this morning I have with me Mr. David Freer. Now, he's an integrated transport and land use planning expert covering policy, plan development, travel behaviour change, active and public transport regulatory approvals across land use, transport and environmental sector information and data gathering. He works primarily in Queensland in those areas, but also works nationally and globally in research, particularly research associated with renewables related in some way to transport industries. We're here to talk in a far more restricted area today, and that's covering the first and last mile of transport, which is a core centre of the work that we've been doing on the subcommittee. So let's begin by just saying welcome, David. It's good to have you here for the podcast.
Thank you, Alan. Very nice introduction. Thank you very much.
So now let's get straight into the discussion. And you're from Birmingham. People would have gathered that who've been to England from just those few words you've said already. So let's get a bit of a background of how life in Birmingham, your observations of traffic patterns in Birmingham, living with those, has inspired you, informed you and motivated you towards your current career path and what we're here to talk about today.
Birmingham's kind of unique city in the European context in the sense that it went through a post-war renovation and renaissance following the post-Second World War. Sorry, we've had lots of wars. And they really embraced the motor car as the mobility travel pattern for a number of reasons. That was the evolution of the motor car becoming a lot more important. The city itself has a background in car manufacturing. It was a centre of car manufacturing and motorbike manufacturing in the UK. And in all fairness to the city planners at the time, they wanted to embrace the brave new world of the post-war in terms of the urban development, the way we travel and we live. So they embraced new urban development, new layouts, very focused on rapid movements and pioneered a new city, a new approach, which in later years has created some problems, but they have addressed that well.
Well, in a way, they've created their own problems by being advanced and leaders in the creation of the vehicles that you mentioned before. Obviously, they're going to be primarily used or at least well used in the region they're created and sold in, and then all of a sudden they have to change back from that, as do many other cities in the world. Can you talk a little bit about that? What changes have they made? Because when one visits Birmingham, it's really obvious and positive changes. But I'm not sure I necessarily noticed the lack of cars. It's just that everything else looks so good, probably because they got rid of a lot of the traffic. What are your thoughts about that and how far they've come?
For me, as a resident and born and bred Birmingham, we pronounce it Birmingham, by the way, it's quite a substantial change, but also they did it well in the recognition that a lot of travel behaviour programs fail because you demonise the car driver or you try to prevent car driving. You have to recognise that car driving is still important and always will be, but you need to embrace that and support that and manage that in a way that also allows different forms of travel. So some of the good things that have come out of Birmingham is there are transport hubs around the CBD that you can drive your car to and catch rapid public transport into the city. They've improved the CBD, taking away a lot of the traffic because it's quite an old CBD, a lot of tall buildings, so it captures a lot of the pollution. And you couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't come out of lunch. We all had our lunch at our desks. There was nowhere to go.
And that's because of the pollution affecting breathing and things like that?
Yeah, there's a pollution plus the designed, one of the designed park areas to go to was in the middle of a raised roundabout sitting on a concrete bench. And that was where you meant to have lunch. And it was not a very nice environment.
Yeah, not to mention the pollution getting on what you're eating as well. Yeah. So you're eating toxins.
So what they've done quite cleverly is, and I think that reflects also here in Brisbane, there's a lot of great natural assets and potential within the city. You just couldn't get to them or access them. They weren't integrated within the transport system and the land use system. So Birmingham has more canals than Venice. It has lots of parks, lots of places to get to, but you couldn't. And one of the catalysts of changes was they built a very modern, very high grade conference centre, but you couldn't get to it because it was surrounded by a ring road. So, and they had a conference centre with a big square outside the front for people to spend time in, but you just physically couldn't get to it. You had to go underneath an underpass and dodgy underpass.
Dodgy in the sense of dangerous for individuals?
It's dangerous, it's full of glass, it's and all of the kind of things, and it's not welcoming, especially at night. You just don't want to go down those kind of areas.
Indeed.
So what they changed is they lowered the road, flattened the area so you can walk straight across, started pedestrianising some of the streets within the city, and progressively allowed the people to come back in and take over that space and then access the canals and the parks. And now it's making a very pleasant environment which to spend time in the city.
So are they using the canals for transport or just for relaxation and atmosphere and ambience?
Bit of both, but you know, the mostly leisure. I mean, the canal boat holiday took off in the 80s and 90s and onwards in the UK. It's a great way to travel. And there's a lot of facilities on the canal routes that take you to pubs and places you can go to, so it became very popular. And also there's a lot of buildings, a lot of warehouses were built alongside in the city. So they became both commercial places and also places to live. And it just revitalised the city and became a place to you want to go to, you want to travel to. Birmingham was always, the joke in Birmingham was, you try to bypass it as quick as you can, go up the M1, go around it, rather than go into it. But now it's got the fastest growing economic business of all the cities in the UK, and it's actually a pleasant, lovely place to go to.
Yeah, it is indeed. Now, there's a few parallels there already, just that listeners would probably be aware of, because most of the listeners are probably Southeast Queenslanders, in that in the 1960s and 70s, when I was a kid, teenager, the river was basically a working space. It was working boats and wharves and things like that. And largely through the vision of one person, a guy called Barry Paul, who headed up an organisation called the Kern Corporation. And the Kern Corporation developed shopping centres all over the place. And Barry started a group that focused on lobbying to get the river area redeveloped as a people area and move the transport and the ships and the, you know, the floating commerce, if you like, out towards the mouth of the river, which has been successfully done. And now if we look at Brisbane, as you said, in Birmingham, it's used for ambience, relaxation, enjoyment, but also for transport. And Brisbane's already done that piece. We've got a lot of focus around the river, South Bank being one, walkways on Kangaroo Point area. But we've also got a very effective and very well-liked transport system along the river. So the parallels there are fine. The parallels seem to fall short when we start talking about what you just mentioned in Birmingham, where inner city traffic's died down, it's become more of a people place. Brisbane's got a long way to go there, has it not? And I may be wrong on that, but I'd love to hear your opinion on that. And also, what steps should we be taking to make Brisbane a better inner city area in terms of handling and managing transport?
And interesting, I'll give you a quick story of what happened in Birmingham. It was a little bit interesting in a way in terms of people promoting it. When I was growing up there, and I used to, for some mad reason, because I was a young, crazy, mad boy, I used to cycle into work, but there was absolutely no active transport. And I probably lost two or three of my nine lives cycling in. And we used to lobby the local council to put a bike lane in, and they never did. But one day the group somehow got hold of a line marking machine and put their own bike lane in. And for a week or so...
And that's why you got exported to Australia, right?
For a week ago, it worked really well and everyone loved it, and I got to cycle on a proper bike lane And it got adopted. Everyone, the car drivers and the work, it was fine. But the council was just embarrassed and angry, and Sonny found money to black the line out and condemned it. But I think that was part of the catalyst I spoke about, the change in the UK of it was all about roads, but then roads were just taking over bypasses and isolating cities and turning England's green and pleasant land into a concrete jungle. And suddenly a lot of pushback was going like, well, what about quality of life and be able to travel and enjoy our time coming into work, going out for lunch, enjoying the great assets that we have, like canals and rivers and parks. But we can't access them the way it's set up. So they just progressively and slowly started making a change. And I think that's happening here in Brisbane as well with some of the bike lanes and whatever. Initial pushback, they're going to say, oh, it's taken away business. But when you actually investigate it, it actually encourages business. When you do some evidence research on it, is actually most people don't drive to a business or park outside. Most people walk to a business. And if you encourage the ability to access to walk to a business and enjoy the environment, then you actually create more business.
And you could almost say that about the growing throughout Australia, but in particular Brisbane. I think we've got probably one of the best city malls in the Queen Street Mall that kept getting extended and now is quite extensive. And it's the major shopping area in Brisbane for all levels of shopping, right up to the international brand names. Whereas in Melbourne, you've still got trams going through the main areas. So do you see we can do better than we've already got? Because it seems that we got that bit, the bit right in the middle of the city, accessing shops, pretty right. What about peripheral to that, but still in the CBD?
I think some of the problems with Brisbane is you get like Edward Street, which is almost a through fare to traffic. And when you're trying to cross that road, you become the second class citizen in the city. And you have to wait for cars. I think if you can start building and slowly integrating, which they've done at the moment in terms of some of the cycle paths along the side, it gets people used to walking and cycling when they're coming in. You start building around the river and the river functions that you have at that moment, and you embrace them a bit more. And when you start connecting little pockets of areas, because Birmingham, like Brisbane, has lots of little pockets of jewels of areas that you can go to. And when you can suddenly walk and access to them and go down side streets, then they have all these little cafes and restaurants and pop-up areas there. Suddenly, the desire to walk around and you don't need to drive and park exactly where you need to get to, once you get into that habit and that kicks in, then it will take off.
Yeah, you're aligning very much with Michael Major's theory from our first of this podcast series, where he's saying we need to have an environment where people have choice. They can do transactional walking, cycling or whatever to get from A to B as quickly as possible. But in order to change habits and behaviours, we need to give them an option where one day they're transactionally moving from point A to point B and they go, wow, that's an interesting thing I haven't seen before, and they stop and investigate it. So eventually, getting to and from work isn't a mad rush to get home. It's a time to unwind. And getting to work is almost a time to relax and think about the time ahead, but in an environment that encourages that slowing down and that type of thinking. What would we have to do in Brisbane, in your mind, to the traffic side in particular, to encourage that sort of transport, to encourage people to be doing the walking or the scootering for the last areas or the last components of their journey to and from work? What do we need to do to encourage more of that?
I think the COVID-19 pandemic has had quite a significant impact on the way people work, and in terms of being able to work from home and not have to come into the office at different times and allowed more flexible travel times. When you look at a lot of the travel patterns, a lot of congestion, it's really around those peak 1 hours at 7:30 to 8:30, the obviously to an extent 4:30 to 5:30 coming back home. When you allow more flexible working patterns and you can start a little bit later, the traffic's much less and you can access a whole bunch of different options to come through and provide that alternative that you don't need to change all of the trip and you just need to change some of the trip. For instance, some of the cycling, when I used to cycle in, a lot of people would drive their car to about two or three Ks outside the city, park on the road, take off the bike at the pass, and then go on an off-road cycle path. So it's safe. There's no interaction with traffic that they would have to do with the whole trip. It's just part of their trip, allows them to go on an off-road cycle path along the river. It's pleasant, it's safe, it's convenient. They can cycle into work. There's end-of-trip facilities. They can cycle back on and go pick up their car. And it's a whole range. There's an old lady who's go flying past me all the time up the hill. And I go like, God, am I got that one fit? Or is she really good? And then she's on an electric bike. And she go flying past me.
Well, that's your excuse and you're sticking to it.
And that's
right.
My excuse and I'll stick to it. And she will drive up, go to her car, put the bike on the back, drive back. She may live in Manly, Cleveland, Colco somewhere. It just gave that little change of options.
Mm.
And if you can support them, then you can. And that's what happened in my hometown. They allowed transport hubs outside of the city where people who don't have that option of being able to catch a bus or a train from a very long distance, it comes a bit difficult. Can still drive their car. And in reality, a lot of us need a car. Like me, I need to drop my kids off sometimes at school and other matters. It allows me to perform that function in the morning, park my car in a safe, secure place, and then catch public transport, or even walk or cycle into my place of work, and then I can do back.
Now, you've introduced a number of really interesting factors there. Let me take you up on one, and that's the idea of getting people connected with different ways of moving and things like that. So we're comparing Europe, Birmingham in particular, with Australia and Brisbane in particular. And a lot of people are now focusing on getting people onto public transport for a number of reasons, the prime one being probably an election, if we're all being truthful, but also the background to that is getting cars off the road and CO2. But when we look at an express train from Birmingham to London, it's about an hour and a bit, and it's 170k roughly, 160, 170. Our express train, and by the way, it doesn't stop anywhere except London. If we get an express from the Gold Coast to Brisbane, it's an express train that stops only at about a dozen stations. It's a bit of a joke, really. It's calling it an express train because it's not really. And it takes an hour and 20 minutes to do the same journey that was like, you know, an hour and 3 minutes when I first arrived here. That's not a sufficiently attractive transport system to get people onto public transport unless they do what they're experimenting with starting soon, namely the low fare. Has that ever been a problem in Birmingham in particular, getting people off of cars into walking, but more particularly onto public transport? Or is it simply the lack of parking close to stations that makes people say public transport isn't an option? Driving a car isn't an option for longer journeys?
I think one of the advantages, and that's an example of my sister, who's not very tech savvy, I must admit, but where technology allows you to support the public transport system. And it's similar to the planes in the sense, you know, the rewards you have and you'll be able to book seats. What they have, some of the technology they've been using there is you can book your seat on a public transport, whether it be a train. Also, that allows you to order your coffee, your meals, particularly longer journeys. And you've got a secure seat. You know you're going to get the coffee that you like. You know you're going to get the food that you like. You're guaranteed. You've got a place to work. I think a lot of the problems with some of the trains, particularly Gold Coast Sunshine, there's no place to work. And you're sitting on a train for an hour, and all you can do is look at your phone. If you allow some better technology, better design, some principles that happen in other transport modes, to use that tech to be able to book your place, you're guaranteed a seat, you're guaranteed all the support services, that gives a little bit more confidence and embraces some of the better quality that we can have in public transport.
I'm going to come back to that thought because I think that really is a core concept regarding moving forward with the use of public transport by the public more broadly around Brisbane and southeast Queensland. That's an excellent point. But there's a lot to be discussed on that. Let me just finish off on the previous point with one more question. Another problem with public transport in Australia, southeast Queensland, is that the main way of getting to, say, a train, particularly, say, Gold Coast to Brisbane or North Coast to Brisbane, is you largely drive. Some people might cycle, but majority drive. More and more people are getting the bus connections. But that requires pretty large car parks around the place, and they're always full now, or most of them are. So if we want to increase the use of public transport, we need more parking space. Whereas we're in England, because we don't have a linear development, you know, down the coast east of the mountains that we have, it's more circular developments of the city pretty much right throughout Europe. That affords a very effective connecting transport system, namely the tube in London and, well, the metro in Italy and Paris and places like that. We're not set up for that. So how do we overcome that problem? Is it high-rise parking lots at every train station, or making better pathways for people to cycle? And any thoughts on that?
It's an interesting fact about perception as well, as in train stations. When you look at the park and ride, you assume everyone drives to it. But some of the research analysis does indicate that an awful lot of people walk to a train station. I think some of the problems with train stations is they're designed for the car access. So walking to a train station is difficult. It's not easy, and you have to walk through the car park. And there isn't designated walk paths. My local train station is exactly that. I have to walk from my home, and my kids catch the train to school. They have to cross a main road. You walk through an unlit park area, which again at night is not going to be good for everyone. And then to access the actual station, you actually walk through the car park. I think with a lot of station upgrades you're happening is you make it more walk friendly. So you're not walking through a car park to get the train station. You also create a lot of facilities and support service around the station itself, within the station. So you have coffee, you have restaurants, you have places where you could spend some time and talk to. So it doesn't just become a transport hub. And like a lot of the great train stations around the world, is you don't just go there to catch a train. You can also go there for other measures.
St. Pancras, for example.
Yeah. So encourage you, it makes the transport less functional and more of an enjoyment. And that tends to get forgotten around in transport planning a little bit, is about the experience of the transport task.
So you've following the airline model, really, the airport model.
Yeah, you've got to compete. And with cars and the technology now, cars are going to be nice things to sit in. Nice, like Tesla. You've got to compete against that. So you've got to make the experience of going on a train or a bus enjoyable, easy to get to, easy to book a seat. You're not walking through a car park and then pushing to get on a train and standing all the way. It's not an enjoyable experience if you can actually walk there, sit down, have a coffee, have a chat with your friends. Then you go to your seat, you can sit at your seat, you can work, your seat's guaranteed. You can do some work. There's toilet facilities, all these type of things happen. It just makes it a lot more enjoyable experience. And that will, having that experience and enjoyment of actually using public transport or walking, that will greatly improve usage, I think.
So to summarise so far, we need to be working on the planning aspects around cities to make sure people want to walk. You mentioned Edward Street before, and I live on the corner of Edward and Queen, so I experience exactly what you're talking about. The problem with Edward Street is it is a main thoroughfare right through the middle of the city, but it's one of only three access points, in a way, to the freeway south. You can either go down Ann Street, or you can get on North Quay or Alice Street, and the access to Alice Street is via Edward, because it goes the other way at Albert. So it's an interesting observation, but I see it as being a difficult one for them to overcome. Yeah. We have to face those things with design in the future. But it seems to be addressing items like that as we go forward is point number one. Secondly, we need to make the experience of being on the public transport, trains in particular, more conducive so that people are not thinking they're wasting 2 hours, rather they're gaining an hour from not driving, or an hour and a half, because they can work and there's plug-in and there's good internet. And you are right, it's just so far ahead of us in Europe generally that it is a joke. And then thirdly, we need to make people feel safer in the environment around, not just from the perspective of being able to walk without being knocked over, having declared pathways, lighting, probably security cameras and alarm points, but also the feeling you might want to, your family members might be coming on different trains. Just stop in a coffee shop and we'll all meet here and have an early dinner or something and head off.
Exactly.
Okay. So let's move on to the next point you raised, which I think is very good. We've talked about this privately before, and I know we are getting better here. You know, we don't have to worry about tickets. We can, have a card and click on and click off, and that's a huge improvement. But when you go to the UK, miles ahead of us, I know we're getting it now, you just flick your credit card to get on and off the train. Tickets weren't necessary. And now in Switzerland, they don't even have gates to get through. They simply walk through and swipe left on an app and it tells everybody they're on the train and they calculate against a credit card what your travel is. We're a long way from that sort of technology. We're also a long way, I think, from the technology that you spoke about, which is an all-encompassing single app that arranges your whole trip, including taxi connections and hotel connections, etc. Can you explain what the international ideal is in your experience?
The international ideal for...
The booking on the app and getting the whole transport and staying away from home experience, a business trip, for example, in one application.
An example, like my sister does work in London. She lives in north of Birmingham and it's a multiple trip connection. So she can order a car that will pick her up from her house, take her to the train station. At the train station, she has her breakfast in the morning and a lunch and bottle of wine on the way back. She likes a bottle of wine. And when she goes...
I think it runs in the family by the look of it.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah. And then she goes down to London and then there's a connection straight to either a tube or another vehicle or a bus that's all pre-booked and arranged and it's all through the app. And when she comes back, same thing again. There's a connection from her place of work that takes her to the tube station or train station. She's on the train on a pre-booked seat. When she gets off the train, there is someone there to pick her up. That can be someone who can drive her car to the place, but she's been drinking too much wine on the plane. Off the time, someone needs to drive her car back to her house and put her into the house as well. And it's all that integrated problem. You don't have to think about what my trips is and have to wait. It's all organized for you. It's all there. It's all guaranteed. It takes away the stress. And also flexibility. If you're running late, it just automatically will update and change it for you.
And that includes hotel bookings and that.
Yeah, everything's kind of all sorted for you. So you just don't have to worry about, is there going to be a connection? Have I missed my connection? Or am I going to get a seat? Or is it going to be available? It runs the whole trip pattern for you.
Complete integration.
Yeah.
Okay, now you work in Southeast Queensland with your planning work and that. And there may be things going on behind the scenes that we don't know. But it seems to me we're a long way from that standard at the moment. Is that true or are we closer than we think and it just isn't in the public eye yet?
I think we're closer than we think. There's certainly that technology is transferable. As you're saying, we're moving away from the go-card to credit card. And I know with all our smartwatches and phones, the technology now is you just walk on and it picks up your phone. And etc. And I know when I go to sporting events and whatever, it's the same thing. You can just walk in through and you can just dip on your phone and there's a ticket sorted out and it's all there. We are not that far away. I think some of the things we need to work on is our frequency in terms of our bus transport and system, a bit more reliability. I think some of the downside is like where I live 10Ks from the city. I can stand at the top of my street and see the city and it takes me over an hour to get in. And then that's comparable or even better when driving. You need to be able to compete against that by I can walk up to the bus and there'll be a bus every 5-10 minutes. It will just take me straight into the city.
Mm. Yeah, so as long as the car is a more attractive means in terms of comfort and speed, you're not going to get people on the public transport is effectively what you're saying.
Yeah, it's always a bit of the carrot and stick. You've got to some way kind of troll it. But if you're going to take that away, that option, you've got to provide a viable, and I mean a really viable option. So it's going to be, again, back to the experience. You're not using public transport as the only option you got to because I can't afford to run a car or something. You need to make it an attractive option. Attractive in terms of usage, attractive in terms of the environment you work in, you travel in and you pick up in, you're catching in a safe area that's well-lit, it's got security, it's got support facilities. And reliability, you can rock up there and it competes against the car in terms of getting in.
I can hear in your voice and in your words a real sense of optimism And the thought that we could transfer a lot of the technology from Europe and possibly even other places in Australia to Brisbane is a really appealing one. But we're still dealing with that lack of attraction. Let's face it, the Brisbane Gold Coast line, which is very busy, we've got a lot more services than we ever used to have on it. But there's still multiple stops, number one. And secondly, there's still quite a length of line that's single track. So they have to coordinate. Now, they're working on overcoming that, I know. But in your best estimate, optimistically speaking, when could we have in Brisbane the sort of systems that you're talking about in your own hometown and elsewhere in Europe so that people wanted to travel by public transport, they wanted to walk around the city because of the changed environment? Do you see that on the radar by the Olympics, after the Olympics? How do you see it?
Yeah, the transition that happened in my home city started in the early 90s and really started by courage and vision from the council itself. When the highway engineer used to run the city, retired, rather than bringing in another highway engineer, they brought in a landscape architect and changed the perspective of looking at the travel needs of the person rather than the vehicle. When you start looking at that perspective, you had different criteria, different KPIs, different needs, and then you realised it didn't really need that much of a change to make it happen.
But what you've described there is a change in primary thinking to kick the whole thing off.
Yeah.
And to round up, if I was to say to you now, what's the message you have for the leaders of the city, if any, the leaders of our state, particularly in regard to Southeast Queensland, to get things moving, to raise the standard from what we have at a quicker rate than it's currently happening to what we could have based on what exists and, as you say, is translatable to Brisbane, but it already exists in other parts of the world? What would your advice be?
I think some of the initiatives they're pushing through now, there's cycle lanes appearing in the city. And look, there was initial pushback to that, but a lot of the research has proven they've been very successful. And not just for the users, but also for the business. It's not an issue of taking away parking. It actually worked. And when you provide that information back to businesses, they can see how it all worked.
So point number one is leaders have to take the people who might perceive they're being negatively affected. They need to be communicating with them to tell them the real research-proven, evidence-based alternate story that what they're doing will be positive for their business. That would be point one.
Yeah, give it time to experience the change. The changes in my hometown were progressively over time. They kind of paved some of the streets in the city that still allowed vehicles and people, and then people eventually took over the street. And the car was eventually pushed out, but you gave an option for that car driver for a different way of doing their travel pattern. All travel behaviour changes fail when you demonise the car driver and saying what you're doing is bad. It's not necessarily bad. You just need to give them an option and then give them to do. And some of the initiatives that are coming out at the moment, we're talking about land use in terms of not needing to have car parking all the time in your building. And that could work. We're looking at reducing the fares. It's not always just about major infrastructure. Okay, we need a lot of infrastructure to work, but it's also you can tweak with what you got and just adjust it a little bit. And there's an amazing benefit you can capture just by just tweaking what you're doing at the moment.
Final question. Can we have the ideal Brisbane in terms of all we've been talking about for the last 35 minutes? Can we have that by Brisbane 2032? And I ask that question because the Committee for Brisbane is very interested and focused upon through their four pillars of investigation and operation, very interested in Olympic legacy. Can this be a fantastic Olympic legacy for the people of Brisbane and Southeast Queensland?
Absolutely. And some of the work the committee's doing in terms of the last mile, first mile tweaking works, the connectivity in terms of street walks and using the potential you have. There's a lot of potential here. There's some great assets you have. There's some great places to go to. It's just a need to tweak it just a little bit, somewhere here, somewhere, start bringing it through. Once it picks up, you may get initial pushback, like with the cycle lanes, people say it's terrible, and now they realise, oh, that actually is quite good. And with the South Bank, see how that worked really well, how the work going around along the riverfront is, and some of the developments, and now Brisbane's moving into a lot more people live in the city and spend time in the city. That's what happened with my home city. Everyone just drove in, got out. No one stayed. But now you're starting making the city as a place to come to, also on the weekends. And it's not just a place for work, it's also a place for life, leisure, enjoyment. And we're going down that right road, forgive the pun. But we're getting in the right space. And I think just continue with that and just keep incrementally changing, slight change of behavior. And once people get used to that change of behavior, they will start adapting it as their normal part of life.
Lovely rounding up comments. Very insightful, David. Thank you very much for your insights, your optimism, and thank you for your service on the Subcommittee on Connectivity. Really enjoyed this interview. I hope the listeners enjoyed as much as I've enjoyed bringing it to them and with you also. Once again, thanks very much for your time, your talent, and your insights.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Alan.